Rob and I make a great team. I don't think it's any secret. Rob likes to know when he's teaching because he'll do research and study and meditate, do a lot of things, which his lesson always shows that he's very, very well prepared. I can't write sermons, can't outline. I just cannot function that way. And so I usually on Thursday or Friday night, I open up the quarterly and see what the lesson is on. And sometimes I look through it and sometimes I don't. And then I just go through a thinking process, and that's the way I teach. So Thursday night about 10:30, I opened up the quarterly, saw the lesson was on rearing children. I immediately shut it because I know nothing about rearing children. If I knew something major about it, I'd be retired on an island having Sue bring me non-caffeinated iced tea as I sit on a beach. So I know nothing about that. So I'm excited about this lesson because I have no idea where we're going on it. So I'm just going to throw it open and see what we end up with. So understanding that, there's two texts in the Bible that immediately came to my mind about rearing children. What text do you think of when you hear about rearing children? What? Train up a child in what?
The way they should go.
The way it should go, and what happens? Okay. Is that a threat? Is that a statement? Is that a promise? Or is that a prayer? We'll come back to it. What's the second statement? Well, I didn't think about that one. But that's a good one. That is a good one. What's another one? What? That's the one I thought about. If you don't whip the kid, they'll tell him, what is it? Spare the rod and spoil the child. Well, I guarantee you I wasn't spoiled when I was reared. See, I guess you raise animals and you rear children. Is that right for the English people? Okay. Now that you know, I kind of recognize that. I just soon use the word raise children. That's easier for me. So, you know, just to understand that. All right. Which one you want to talk about first? Spare the rod or train up the child? How many would like to meditate the next 35 minutes upon this subject that is absolutely thrilling? Just an idea. Hey, I just throw about it. Yes?
What always struck me is about that is they were talking about a shepherd's rod and a shepherd's staff. And rod is for protection from the sheep.
Okay.
By the shepherd. Staff is to guide the go in the direction he wants it to go, the hook, so on. And so in that sense, children, I'm just saying, they need protection and they need guidance.
Okay. So it is not to beat or to spank or to whip. Yes, Rob.
Well, rod really has nothing to do with a shepherd's rod. It has to do with a rule. It's talking about the commandments.
Okay.
And it's stating about that when you train a child, and it has nothing to do with beating a child.
Okay.
It has to do with informing a child about the promises of God and what
okay.
He will do.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Is discipline something that, let's see, we have three counselors over here, and we got a counselor over here. Anybody else counselor? I counsel Sue, but I don't think that counts. So. Anybody else? No. All right. Is discipline a problem today, raising children?
Yes, it is.
How do you know? Pardon?
Those are the people who call.
Oh, they are? Okay. Were we raised undisciplined as much as children today are?
No.
You sure?
Positive.
Anybody got the marks to prove it? Yeah. You know, I...
Because I was the fifth daughter and I knew what I could and could not do.
Okay. You mean the parents had it down by the time they had you. Okay. I took a new hire to lunch the other day, a gentleman that I'd hired at Hawk, and we went to Texas Land and Cattle for lunch. And we, as I was walking out, saw a young couple, daughter, I would think 3. And she had her phone or pad, and they each had their phone out. And I just kind of stopped and watched for about 2 minutes. And each one of them was doing their own thing on their own phone. And at least for the 2 minutes I saw, and I had to believe it was much longer, there was absolutely no interaction between the 3 of them, period. Now, what do you do with the quote that says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart? What does that mean to you? The Catholic Church says, give us a child until they're 5 years old, and they will remain a Catholic their entire life. So what does that mean to us or to parents, train up a child? What does that mean? How do you interpret that?
We have to be examples.
Pardon?
We have to be examples in our home.
Okay.
And this generation, I believe, the younger generation, they're not good examples. And if you don't want your child to curse, then of course you should not curse. They shouldn't be exposed to it. If you're Christ-like, if they see Jesus in you, that's the example they need.
Okay.
Because the world is going to affect them eventually, but your home base is the foundation. If you don't have a good home, you're not going to be a good child.
Okay, appreciate that.
His first 4 or 5 years are probably the most formative.
Okay, that's absolutely. What else does that text mean to you? What? Yes.
It doesn't say that your child will not ever depart from the religion. It says that you train up a child in the way to go. And that training will never depart from the child. The child will always remember that training later in their life.
Okay.
They will. So it will never depart from them.
Okay. So you're not saying that if you train up a child in the correct way, he's not ever going to change his mind. But he just remembers the what we call the good old days. All right? Who else would like to comment on that? Yes?
You know, the prodigal son isn't a perfect example of this kind of this quote because, yeah, he went out and sowed his wild oats. But in the end, he came back to where he had the training. He had, saw, this is really... My father's house is really the place to be.
Okay, all right. That's absolutely correct. By the way, what kind of training did the elder brother have?
Same training.
Which one spiritually was always in the best shape? Pardon? The one who left? Absolutely. He was always in the best shape spiritually. Why?
He was seeking something.
He knew where he stood. You see, when he wanted to rebel, he knew he was rebelling. He made a simple choice. The choice was, I don't want to be with you. In fact, he almost said the same thing as, I wish you would die so I could get the inheritance. It's basically what he was saying. So he knew that this life he did not want. And he chose a separate life. And then when that didn't work out, through the goodness of God being in the pig pen with him, he decided to come home. How about this statue of the elder brother's spirituality? Why would I say that he was in worse shape than the prodigal?
He always told it.
Yeah.
It was always out of duty.
Yeah. He thought he had it made.
Pharisees.
Yeah, the whole parable, by the way, was given to the Pharisees. They were the ones listening to this. It was one of the last appeals that Jesus made to the Pharisees, the religious leaders of the church. Can't you see who you are? And the tip-off of the elder's brother's spirituality went to church on the right day, paid the tithe on the right day, worked in his father's house, did everything for his dad, was there, was supportive, did everything that he could do, and he didn't love his dad because the proof of that is, in that story, when his dad was at the height of his happiness, that his dead son had come home, he did not enter into that joy one bit. So remember that when we deal with our children and our grandchildren. Just because they're over there doesn't mean they're any worse shape spiritually than maybe the one that is right here. Because it's the motive that matters.
Well, it's really interesting when you look at that passage and that story, and then you go back and you look at Job. When the three friends were trying to comfort him, and he said, "You are lousy friends." He says, in essence, he says, "I know my father so well that if I could run into his presence right now, I would run into his presence, and I know he would listen to me."
Yeah.
"And he does not judge me. He would comfort me." Well, it's amazing. That kid in the pig pen, the very first place he wanted to go,
yes,
was to the Father. He,
yes,
knew he would be accepted.
Yes. And even then he didn't understand how good his daddy was, because he came back and said, "Let me start out at the bottom. Let me start out as a servant. And I'll work my way back into the good graces." You know, I'm thinking about Sandy. She called me this morning and asked about Eugene and having prayer and wanted to be baptized. What hoops would you put this man through in before he could be baptized? Zero. Do you get that picture? Some would say, let's put him through the 20 lessons of the correspondence course. Some would say, well, we've got to go over our diet. See, Philip, when he saw the Ethiopian, and the Ethiopian said, "Well, hey, here's water." Remember, he's reading the book of Isaiah. "Here's water. I'd like to be baptized." Some versions say that Philip said, "That's great. Here's the 20th century Bible course. When you finish this, call me." Get him baptized. There are no hoops. If you don't believe it, go back and read the parable of the good daddy when the prodigal came home. He had no time to listen to his son's speech. He was busy putting a robe around him, his ring on his finger, sandals on his feet, and throwing a party. I don't know the answer to rearing, raising children. I do know that one thing, I just look at my life. Didn't have children for a long time in my life. And quite frankly, I was an expert. I knew everything. I'd see somebody at church with their kid. I knew exactly what to do. People would say, I got this problem. And I would sit back and say, well, you ought to do 1, 2, and 3. See, I had every answer to what should be done in raising children. Because I had none. And by the way, I really believe that I was correct. Except I missed one thing when children came into my life. And boy, it's a biggie. Because my daddy used to tell me, man, the one thing I dislike is you're not raising children of your own, and you'll never appreciate your upbringing till you have children. And boy, is that a true story. You see, I was correct in what should be done in the raising of children because I knew the principles. Here's what I missed. I missed the emotion of that decision. And the eternal hope that we have in dealing with a child that he will see the error of the ways this time and make the necessary changes. The course I had was correct. The emotion I did not ever understand until you become emotionally involved. And then all of a sudden it wasn't quite as easy. We had a 13-year-old daughter that lived with us. And oh, she went off on me one day. And went through some exercises. And I remember calling my daddy up. And I'm saying, Dad, yeah, got a question for you. And boy, I meant this. He says, what's that? I said, how did you help keep from killing me when I was growing up? You see, that's what I missed, was that emotion. And then it began to dawn with me in a slow process. This is the way God deals with me. He goes through the same pain with us as we do with our children. He knows when we get off the path, way that we would want to react, but because He is God and He cares and He loves, and His character is different sometimes from us, oh, how patient He is. And sometimes I've looked back in my life and said, God, how did you keep from strangling me? Because I think that's really, in a way, what I deserved. I think children today, and I guess every generation thinks this, but I think children today have a terrible, terrible problems that we never faced. I think the social pressure, Red and Dear Abby or Dear Ann or Dear somebody, our daughter, 13, is obsessed with her phone. And she's on it constantly. And we're afraid to take it away from her because she'll be mad. And what should we do? Now see, when you have no children like I was at one time, the answer's simple. Just take the phone from her. What part of that? What part of did you not understand that you get your phone 1 hour a day? See, that is a, so simple of an answer, it's sickening. And if you don't like it, you're grounded. See, that's your answer. But they said, we're afraid we're going to make her mad. Now, in fairness, I mean, you know, we're talking generally. What chance does that girl have in life? I mean, per se, you know. Who's running the home? You got TV. You got all video games. You got all these things that kids takes up the kids' time. I don't know. I didn't have all that. Used to go out in the morning, play basketball, ride bicycles. Parents say, be home by supper tonight. If you get hungry, come home for lunch. Never thought anything about it. Out there playing, enjoying, exercise, got lots of good times. Yeah, some people got in trouble. But look at what we have today. How do we as parents, grandparents, raise a child today? Because it says train up a child. What was the one that you had?
Children, obey your parents.
Obey your parents. Spare the rod, spoil the child. What do we do today? From Carlsbad, they said we got to be an example. See, I think the answer is send them to Burton. See? That's right.
Just to let you know. Right?
Perfect. Perfect answer. Bundle them up, send them to Burton. My parents were very strict with me. Very fair, but just very strict. And so when I was a junior in high school, they decided that they wanted me to... I decided I wanted to go to Keene. Back then, Keene was a junior college, so you had 4 years high school and 2 years college. And so you lived in the dorm with all the college kids. So when I was a junior in high school, off to Keene I go. And my folks... you know, I used to play the organ for MV. I was an MV leader. 16, I was had preached in the El Paso church and was a student, had sold books with my dad. I mean, I was kind of the perfect kid. So I get down to Keene, and 6 weeks later, my mother comes down to visit me, and she gets a room at the old Fort Worth Texas Hotel. And I still remember Friday night, she's on the phone crying, calling my daddy, saying, come and get this kid. You don't know what he's like. And I used a couple of cuss words. Me and Peter, see, we were kind of in the same boat, you know. One of them say, and in my pocket, I pulled out my switchblade knife. And my daddy, bless his heart, he says, oh, no, we blah, blah, blah. Now, what happened in that six-week period? Pardon?
Their parents weren't around.
Yeah. Mom, when she left me at Keene, her and my aunt brought me down, they were just boo-hooing. And I'm going... You see, my parents, they meant the best. And there's nobody like my daddy to me. He's passed. Nobody like my daddy. My mom's 90, still alive. Nobody like her either. But, you know, they cared, and I loved them, and they did the best they could. But you see, I was allowed to make no decisions per se.
I mean, when I was 10 years old, we went to the Book and Bible House. Remember camp meeting? Remember that? Well, old-fashioned, they used to have a camp meeting for a whole week. And, you know, people would take off on vacations and actually go to them and stay. And, you know, unheard of today. So my parents, they went to camp meeting 20-something years in a row. And, I mean, it was big time in our family. So always I could go to the Book and Bible House, and I was allowed to buy one book of whatever I wanted. When I was 10 years old, I bought the most useless book I've ever bought in my life, a dictionary. But at 10, that was my thinking. And when I got away, as I said to my mother, and I quote, I was just like a horse turned loose. But I stand here today, and boy, my spiritual journey has been up in the pig pen. That's why I preach the pig pen story wherever I go. Been there, up. And I stand here today because of what my parents did when I was young. Never went smooth for them. You know, kicked out of Adventist school 4 times. I just want to see what life was like out there. So there's a balance. Parents meant well, probably adjusted too far to one side. Or I was just an idiot. I don't know which one. See? Now, let's look at Jesus as a baby. What do you think, and I don't know if the lesson touched on this or not, it certainly should have. What do you think from year zero to the age of 12? Now, when Jesus went to the temple at 12 years old, did he know who he was? Huh? Did he know who he was? Pardon?
I
think he did. What do you think?
I'd say I think he did.
Think he did. What do you think?
No.
You don't think at 12 he knew who he was yet? Okay. What do you think those formative years were like? Because I am going to give you a quote that we have the same power from God to raise our children as Mary and Joseph did. We have the same power to raise our children as Mary and Joseph did. That does not make me want to say yippee-yay. Part of me says, that just makes good sense. So what do you think went on in Jesus' life from the age of 1 day to the age of 12 when the scholars marveled at what he knew from the scriptures?
According to the lesson, it says his mother was his first human teacher. He didn't go to the synagogue.
Okay. No Burton Academy.
No Burton
Academy. Homeschool. Well, that's a frightening thing for some people, and that's a good thing for some people. Leroy.
When we look back at the history of the education of Jewish children, Jesus was instructed exactly the way all Jewish children were. His early childhood was with the parents, predominantly with the mother. The father was a big help, but predominantly was with the mother. And I'm sure that with the knowledge that Mary had of who Jesus was, He was instructed very, very well.
Okay. All right. Who else would like to weigh in on this? Do you think Jesus played with other kids? By the way, what kind of town was Nazareth?
It was wicked, I believe.
Pardon?
I understood it to be wicked.
All right, and where do you get that from?
I don't know.
That's why I like this man. Perfectly. By the way, you're on the right track. Yeah. What did, was it Nathaniel said to Philip? Can anything good come out of Nazareth? Hey, this wasn't a pristine Highland Park. Do you think Jesus did chores as a boy?
Yes. That's where he learned a lot of his parables.
Okay. Do you think Jesus studied nature?
Yes.
Thank Jesus today, if he was born and he was 6 years old, that he would be level 78 on some stupid game? Hey, that's a real question. Jesus was 8 years old. Would he be on level 8 or level 84 of some video game? Hey, nobody wants to answer that. Pardon?
Theologically, he would have been well above.
Okay. All right.
The evidence was that when he went to the temple at the age of 12. Theologically, he was well above the age of the so-called teachers.
Okay. What do you think his life was like? Some magic in that life? Something that he had that we don't have? Pardon? Pardon? What's my point? My point is that we must realize that we have the same opportunity to raise our children, our children's grandparents, whatever, talking to old people, but we ought to be having this in young kids' classes. The greatest influence is going to be what goes on in that home. Sue and I are driving home one day from church, and our daughter says, Why are you complaining about what goes on at church? Never thought of that. Hey, did you see what so-and-so did? Yeah, what an idiot. And my daughter's sitting there in the back seat. You see, we are the example. Church is part of it. School is part of it. We have some people in here from the education part. If it's not done in the home, school's not going to change. They can help. They can participate. They can give direction. It comes in the home. I think the most awesome responsibility that we have is we're great at sending the Doss family to Thailand and giving a few dollars and doing mission. But the greatest responsibility is our family. I don't know. I know this is not going to sound right, so please just take in context. I'm more interested in my daughter and her family being in heaven than I am the person in Waxahachie. Does that make sense? See, I want the person in Waxahachie also. But it's my family. Now, how do we do that? We have to have the relationship. You can't fool these kids. They spot a phony in a second. We have to have the relationship. It has to be part of us. We can't sit down at breakfast, have prayer, read a devotion, say, go get them, kid. And then what we do throughout the day is a mess. Used to watch a program called The Wonder Years. Great, great program. And for those that seen it, Kevin Arnold's daddy come home from work every day, and he usually was mad and he was upset. And he wore a suit and he'd be taking his tie off. And so finally one day, Kevin goes to work with his dad. And his dad gets jumped on and everything. So we go to that evening, and here comes the dad. He comes stomping through the kitchen and taking off his tie. What's for supper? And a few minutes later, here comes Kevin. He's walking in, taking off his tie. And, hey, let's eat, you know. See, mimicking. Understanding. How do we raise children? I have no earthly idea. But I do know one thing. The only way you witness to your family is the only way you witness to the world. When they look at us, they must see the heart of God.
Amen.
My Father in heaven, as a boy you were precious, but you learned. You went through the scriptures and realized that you were loved. Help us to impart upon our family the same graciousness of God that's shown in our lives can be shown in their lives. In Jesus' name, amen.